Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack. Does your business use the three bin system? Learn more about your legal recycling obligations at repack.ie.
Well, now it's time for the Green Scene, and we're joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, who is the Science for Society Director at Research Ireland. Ruth, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
First of all, the moon is rusting.
The moon is rusting. And when we look up in the sky, we often hear about Mars being the red planet because it's got loads of iron oxide or rust on it. But of course, the moon we sort of think of as a bit of an inert lump of rock. But about 5 years ago, Indian Chandrayaan mission saw that there looked like rust, particularly at the poles of the moon and particularly at the bit of the moon that was facing us.
Kind of reddish brown.
Reddish brown. And that was a bit of a conundrum because there's no oxygen up on the moon. Yeah. And we all know we need oxygen to create rust. And there probably is a bit of water up there, which usually acts as a catalyst for rust. But it was a bit of a mystery. And scientists were wondering, you know, could it be coming from some kind of volcanic gas or asteroids hitting the moon? But one of the theories was that it was us or Earth that was responsible actually for this rust. And of course, most of the time, the Earth and the moon are bathed in sort of solar winds. So there's winds coming off the sun all the time, and they are filled with charged hydrogen ions. And hydrogen actually does the opposite of rusting. It should clear rust, exactly. So we were kind of wondering what was going on. And about 5 days every month, the Earth gets between the moon and the solar wind. So there's sort of a blocking happens of those solar ions that are coming at the moon and at us. And this thing called a magnetosphere, it's almost like a comet's tail. But in those 5 days, the idea was maybe particles from Earth were actually being sort of dragged to the moon. And maybe that's where the oxygen particles were how they were getting to the moon. So just this week, scientists published results which tested that theory. Mm-hmm. So this is from a university in Macau in China. And they basically got a whole range of different lunar minerals that look like the soil or the regolith that's on the moon. And they blasted them with high energy ions of oxygen and hydrogen. And they were able to really accurately recreate what might have happened. So this is showing this is probably what's happening. The 25 days a month or 26 days a month of hydrogen ion bombardment isn't enough
to clean the rust. Okay, why don't we just go there again? Get onto the moon and figure out all these things on the ground.
I mean, it's amazing to some people that it's been so difficult for us to get people back on the moon when we did it kind of back in the 70s.
I mean, we know that those little capsules had less technology than we have in our mobile phones.
Way less.
But it should be easy to do.
Well, it should be. It probably is technically easy to do. There hasn't really been the funding or the political will to do it, I suppose. Like NASA used to take up a 4% of the US budget. Now it's only a tiny fraction of the US budget. But actually, the Artemis missions are going back up. So this week again, NASA said they're going to move that launch date earlier. So it was going to be April next year. It's now going to be February. So four astronauts, three Americans and a Canadian, are going to spend about 10 days not landing on the moon, but circling the moon.
Okay.
They're going to test out some of the newer technologies that we have around surviving in space, communications, thermal protection. And then the idea is the following year, the Artemis 3 mission
will go to the moon
again and with people. So that's very exciting. Mm. We might find out more about what's happening.
What did Kennedy say? That we're not doing it because it's easy. We're doing it because it's hard.
Yeah, well, it is. Remains hard.
Remains hard. All right, now, the next thing is very exciting. It's the world's first AI-designed virus that can kill harmful bacteria.
That's right. So there are lots of viruses already around us that are good at killing bacteria. So we call them bacteriophages or phages for short. And actually, interestingly, when the Iron Curtain came down, scientists in the West found that Russian scientists were using these little isolated phages to kill some bacterial diseases. And it's kind of something that Western medicine has only caught up with maybe in the last 10 years or so. But these little viruses have very short genomes, relatively speaking, only about 6,000 what we call base pairs. So that C-A-G-T of DNA, they have it in their DNA or in their RNA. So they were one of the first genomes we could sequence in a lab. So that was kind of many years ago. But now this is a whole new step forward because scientists in Stanford have actually used AI to design a brand new type of phage, one of these viruses. So they took a whole load of existing phage sequences, so that we know the genome of many of these viruses. They were fed into an AI machine. I should say they didn't use anything that has any known pathogenicity, nothing that's dangerous for humans. But they got the AI to then generate novel phages. So it couldn't just tweak one or two tiny things. It said generate things that are quite new. And it came up with about, I think, 300 options. And they sequenced, they actually created a number of these in the lab. And about 12 of them were 16 of them were actually viable. They were able to infect E. coli, which would be the natural host of some of these phages. And not only, they were able to do it better and faster than some of the ones that we see exist, the viruses we see existing in nature already.
So this is quite exciting stuff. I mean, to kill bacteria, given a bacterial resistance and so on to antibiotics, this is something very welcome. But what about new antibiotics? Can AI help us there?
Yeah, well, AI is also helping us with antibiotics. As you say, that's a really big issue. And again, this was earlier this year in MIT. Scientists did the same kind of thing. They gave an AI loads of different examples of things that look like antibiotics. They also gave it bacterial sequence and said these are the kind of parts of a virus or a bacteria that we have to attack. Come up with some new options. Now, in this case, the AI came up with 32 million different options. And again, this is all happening at lightning speed using massive computational power. Now, in that case, the scientists had to re-look at it and filter them down and go, well, could we make this? Is it likely to be safe? You know, is it really new or is it just like something we already have? But they were able to create about 8 or 9 that they could make in the lab. Mm-hmm. And of those, 2 worked very successfully. One against drug resistant Staph aureus, MRSA, which we hear about a lot of the time as a hospital acquired bug, and one against a drug resistant form of gonorrhea. Those were in mice. Those infections were cleared, not in humans. But it's certainly showing us how we can potentially speed up discovery.
Are they working in the same way as the classical antibiotics, or is there a novel mechanism at play here?
So those two particular antibiotics were completely novel. And that is really, really exciting because it's so hard to come up with new antibiotics. I mean, I think the flip side of this is in the wrong hands, you know, what could this technology do, whether it's the phages or, you know, designing new kind of drugs. And I think that's where, you know, one of the questions I would ask is, are we ready for this technology? Mm-hmm. Have we thought about it enough to know how we're going to deploy it? Who's going to control it?
Someone designs the killer bug.
Well, exactly. And then how do we respond? And of course, it's quite possible that AI could provide a solution for a new virus as well. It could possibly come up with some kind of new vaccine sequence, but we would need to be ready to do that.
And in terms of the ones that have been shown to work in the lab against resistant gonorrhea and MRSA, it's all very well in the Petri dish.
Well, it's in mice. It's gone beyond a Petri dish, which is good, but...
So they give mice gonorrhea. And
they do give mice gonorrhea in these experiments, or the MRSA. But I think it's just fascinating to talk about this because a lot of people, it almost seems like science fiction. And as you say, it has a little bit of the sort of scientist in the lab creating viruses. It can sound a bit ominous, actually. But the reality, as with most technologies, there's 2 sides to every coin. And I suppose that's where the interesting conversation happens. How are we going to sort of have a broader conversation about what we want to do with
these things? It's the genie in the bottle, isn't it?
Well, and that phrase has been used a couple of times this week since this paper came out, because, you know, one of the scientists said the kind of the transition from being able to read a genome, being able to write a genome, but actually to be able to write a brand new genome from scratch, a new form of life, every single component, that's a whole other...
I don't know whether you saw the story in one of the papers this morning about... being able to create a baby without a woman being involved.
Absolutely. And I think all of these technologies really need more discussion. You know, it's all very well people reading the headlines, hearing a short discussion on the news or on a program like this, but we probably need better ways as a society to think about what we're going to do with these types of technologies.
I mean, the big thing is the ethical framework.
Of course.
Where is it? There isn't one at the moment.
And scientists are not the people to set that. You know, we need to set that as a broader society of people. So
science will do what science does. Go for discovery and innovation.
Absolutely,
and all the rest.
But scientists would welcome, I think, broader conversations. It's really important.
Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland, thank you very much.
Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack. Does your business use the 3-bin system? Learn more about your legal recycling obligations at repack.ie.